Hello and welcome to the Asia Democracy Chronicles podcast. I am Amarali Bhatt and this is the podcast where we will talk about the ongoing situation in the world's most militarized zone, Indian administered Kashmir, with Dr. Sheikh Shaukat Hussain. Mr. Shaukat is a well-known political analyst, a scholar of human rights and international law, and a writer based in Srinagar, the summer capital of Indian administered Kashmir. From 1990 to 1995, Mr. Shaukat served as an assistant professor at International Islamic University, Malaysia. Later, he moved to Indian administered Kashmir and worked as an academician at different universities. Previously, he was the head and dean of the Department of Law, School of Legal Studies in the Central University of Kashmir. Mr. Shaukat has written 4 books, including Islam and Human Rights, Facets of Resurgent Kashmir, Kashmir Profiles, and Kashmir Saga. Besides, he has written 4 chapters in books authored by prominent scholars, 14 articles, and hundreds of newspaper articles. Mr. Shaukat, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
Before I will start conversation with Mr. Shaukat, let me briefly tell you about Kashmir. Kashmir, with its stunning natural beauty and strategic location, continues to be one of the world's longest unresolved conflicts between two arch rival neighboring countries, India and Pakistan. Both the countries claim the region in full, but only control parts of it. In the late 1980s, armored insurgency broke out in the part of Kashmir controlled by India. Several rebel groups who are fighting Indian paramilitary forces want either a separate nation or a merger of territory with Pakistan. Lately, Indian administered Kashmir has grabbed the attention of international newspapers because in August 2019, Narendra Modi's Hindu Nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP, had revoked the Article 370 and 35A, thereby stripping the Muslim majority Kashmir region of its semi-autonomous status. The region was bifurcated into two union territories, now controlled directly by New Delhi. Article 35A empowered the Indian administered Kashmir's legislature to define the status of permanent residents and their special rights and privileges. It barred non-residents from permanent settlement and acquiring immovable property, government job, scholarships, and aid. A few hours before the BJP announced its decision, Kashmir was put under clampdown and communication blackout. Following the abrogation of special status, India has passed several laws for the disputed region and implemented new policies that critics say will change the demography of the region. BJP justified the move by claiming that the revocation of semi-autonomy would bring prosperity and development to the region. More than 2 years later, experts believe there is little evidence of this. Mr. Shaukat, let me ask you. New Delhi is consistently claiming that they are building Naya Kashmir, which means New Kashmir, where development, peace, prosperity are prevailing. Are these claims true? I mean, what is the situation of Indian administered Kashmir at this moment?
Actually, there is nothing new about it. Once they replaced Sheikh Abdullah with Bakshi Ghulam Ahmad in 1953, Bakshi Ghulam Ahmad also claimed that he is building New Kashmir for development and all this. And for a while, it seemed that he is trying to develop. But since the actual issue remained unresolved, whole of this myth of development exploded in 1963. Once holy relic at Hazratbal was displaced and people came to streets and dismantled whole of that structure. So they are retrying the same thing, but it has failed in past and it will fail this time and is failing this time as well, because the actual aspiration of people for resolution of Kashmir dispute remains unaddressed.
It has been claimed that new laws like domicile and land laws that has been passed last year and implemented in Indian administered Kashmir will change the demography of the region. What is your view about this, Mr. Shaukat?
Actually, once they amended Article 370 and once that bill was moved in the Parliament of India, it was made clear by Prime Minister of India and Home Minister of India both that basic purpose of change of this status, autonomous status of Jammu and Kashmir, is to allow the Indians living in different states of India to settle in Kashmir and purchase land over there, because until now it was forbidden. So it is obvious. It is on the record of the parliament that they mentioned it. It is not only they. Basically, their ideologue, Mohan Bhagwat, has mentioned it on so many occasions that the only solution to Kashmir is to to change its demography. And that is what has been the basic purpose of scrapping the autonomous structure of Jammu and Kashmir.
Has the conflict escalated in Indian administered Kashmir post abrogation of semi-autonomous status, or it has really what the BJP claimed de-escalated?
Actually, they were guided by their ideological understanding of the issue rather than the practical nuances of the Kashmir dispute. They never anticipated that China will react on it. They never anticipated that people, those who were holding the flag of India over here, they too will be disillusioned. And they don't know now where to go, because they have entered a dark tunnel where they don't see an escape route. That is why their rhetoric often asserts that they have achieved something, whereas on the ground, they have achieved nothing apart from dismantling the legal framework that managed the Jammu and Kashmir for so many years. So they have been unable to do it, and it has created a lot of sense of insecurity over here. And those who were living peacefully, they too feel scared now. This is the situation.
Since April 2020, authorities in Kashmir have been using global public health COVID-19 as an excuse to bury armed rebels quietly in faraway graveyards, so as to prevent the large gathering of mourners. A few months after the new policy was implemented, the Inspector General of Police told the Hindu, a national daily broadsheet, that the policy has not only stopped the spread of COVID infections, but also stopped the glamorizing of terrorists and avoided potential law and order problem. As things stand today, the families continue to demand permission for a proper burial for their loved ones at their ancestral graveyards. But the authorities won't budge, insisting that the faraway burial ground is a part of their war on terror. Mr. Shaukat, is denying dead bodies of armed rebels to their families violation of any international law?
Actually, denial of burial rights to those who are fighting Indian state or civilian is basically not only against the Geneva Conventions relating to armed conflicts, be they international and or non-international, but also against the Indian Constitution. It has been time and again mentioned by different courts within India that right to burial is a fundamental right, and it can't be scrapped. Even an alien who is fighting a country is entitled to it, because we have a procedure for repatriation of dead bodies of soldiers who get killed in international conflicts. And India too has availed benefits of this convention with its wars with China as well as Pakistan, once they received dead bodies of their soldiers. So once a person dies while fighting or becomes incapacitated, he no more remains an enemy. He remains an ordinary human being, and all the rights to which an ordinary human being is entitled, an injured, dead combatant is also entitled to those. And this is a globally accepted norm. And such a thing is a flagrant violation of international law as well as their own constitution.
And what will be the outcome of this new strategy?
Before scrapping up special status of Jammu and Kashmir and before denial of dead bodies to the families of the militants, we had insurgency mostly confined to rural areas. Now it has spread to even urban centers. Srinagar has become a hotbed of militancy. It is obvious that the strategy has not worked. It might have squeezed the space of the people. It might have tended to create a deterrence among those who are fighting the state, but it does not seem to have worked to contain the rebellion, contain the insurgency, and contain those who are fighting for resolution of Kashmir dispute.
So many things have happened in Indian-administered Kashmir over the last 2 years, and one among them is the extensive use of Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, or UAPA. According to reports, more than 2,000 people have been booked under UAPA since 2019 in Kashmir. This law enables the state to detain someone without a charge for 180 days, that too without that person being tried in a court or convicted. Why this law has been extensively used in Kashmir, especially after the abrogation of semi-autonomous status, and how it has impacted the people of Kashmir?
It is not only Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, but several other laws that remain in Jammu and Kashmir for a long time, like Armed Forces Special Powers Act or Disturbed Areas Act. All these Public Safety Act, all these legislations, they have been used extensively to suppress dissent over here. The only new thing that has been added is that they arrest people and they send them to jails outside the state. And this is the added dimension, though we have so many instances of it being used previously as well. Leaders like Sheikh Abdullah were detained far away in Kodaikanal, South India, when he was also spousing the cause of plebiscite in Kashmir. So it is since those days that this type of laws have been used over here extensively. Previously, they were used in isolated instances, but now they are used extensively, and people are being picked up without any reason or rhyme, merely on the basis of suspicion, and detained under UPA, Unlawful Prevention Act, and such other laws. So this has choked the space of ordinary human beings over here and made the life of families of those who are detained miserable. It is easy for them to arrange legal defense if they are detained in Kashmir. And once a person is detained far away in various parts of India, for a Kashmiri, it is almost impossible to arrange legal defense for him at those places, given the fact that there is a huge hostile atmosphere against Muslims in general and Kashmiris in particular, all over the India. And it is not easy for Kashmiris, especially those females whose kith and kin remain detained at different detention centers in India, to go and meet them and arrange legal defense for them. This is a huge problem and a humanitarian problem, and world needs to attend to it, because once you choke the space, automatically people are pushed to wall, and they feel that in the indifferent world, the only way to restore their rights is to fight on. So instead of curtailing, curbing the spirit of insurgency, it cultivates it. And that is the tragic part of it.
Over the years, so many people, especially journalists and social media users, were summoned by the police and threatened. Are these new tactics adopted by the government to silence people?
Obviously, every tactic of harassing a journalist, denial of advertisements to newspapers, or censoring them, whatever they publish, remains an old tactics. And I will tell you that we used to have several local TV channels over here since 2010. All of them were barred from broadcasting any news item or news commentary. And We don't see that now, 9 TV, this TV, that TV, that used to be during those days. We don't have such type of TVs over here. There are few working from Jammu, but they are state managed, not anyone operating from Kashmir. After 2019, whatever was left in the form of print media, that too has been curbed and snatched from people. And unfortunately, those who snatch it, those who stop expression of people, they believe that it is helping them. Whereas history tells us that it has never helped. Even in India, once Indira Gandhi imposed emergency, she imposed a strict censorship across India, was under this illusion that people are happy with her. And government TVs, which were the only media available at that juncture, would often glamorize such acts of Indira Gandhi. But what we saw is that the emergency was imposed in 1975. In 1977, Indira Gandhi, along with her Congress party, they lost the elections. And people's anger got manifested in the form of dissent they expressed in the form of their voting. So same situation is true about Kashmir. The system believes that by choking the voice, by not allowing the dissent to get reflected in print or electronic media, they will be able to curtail the dissent. But history tells us that such tactics, instead of curtailing it, they trigger it. And dissent then assumes such forms which are not desired by those who try to choke the space of media.
Scores of government employees were terminated from their service this year in Indian-administered Kashmir. The dismissed employees say that they have not been given any chance to defend themselves or counter the allegations leveled against them. However, the Lieutenant Governor Manoj Sinha, who acts as a top administrator in Kashmir, said the action will always be taken against those who promote secessionism and terrorism in the Union Territory. The termination order of employees also said that the dismissal is in the interest of the security of state and that it is not expedient to hold an inquiry. Is it justifiable to terminate an employee who has served in the government department for years in the interest of the security of the state without informing the employee and holding any inquiry?
At the first instance, once an employee is recruited, they go for a verification of his past. And it is after that certificate by their agencies that he is appointed. This is one part of it. At the time of dismissal, refusal to give him chance of being heard is against the basic tenets of natural justice. Natural justice says that no one can be condemned unheard. He should be given a chance to represent his case, to clarify his position. Unfortunately, this is not being done. And those who issue statements, be it governor or any other authority, they don't realize what positions they hold. They are supposed to talk in terms of the constitution. They take oath to uphold the constitution, and constitution provides that no one can be deprived of his life or liberty save in accordance with procedure established by law. And procedure established by law includes basic principles of natural justice, and it was held by none other than Supreme Court of India in Maneka Gandhi case, that whenever a person is subjected to deprivation of life and liberty, he must be given a chance of being heard, which should be just, fair, and reasonable. And livelihood is part of right to life. So once you deprive a person of his livelihood, you are, by your constitution, required to give him a chance of being heard. Unfortunately, this is not being adhered. And authorities brazenly talk about it, that since they act against the security, therefore we will not give them a chance of being heard. But by saying so, they are trampling their constitution and the rights guaranteed within it.
Why is BJP taking so long time to start the political process yet again in Indian administered Kashmir or return the statehood to the region?
As I told you earlier, they have entered a dark tunnel once they scrapped the special status of Jammu and Kashmir. They don't know how to come out of it. That is why they are unable to understand. At one juncture, they mentioned that all the pro-India parties, they were just stooges and corrupt stooges. And after some time, Modi called them for discussions. Now, this itself indicates that they are on back foot. At the same time, they never anticipated international reaction, particularly from China, relating to this issue. That has unnerved them, and they don't know where from to start. And they don't have such people who can get them out of this precarious situation. Unfortunately, the traditional handlers of Kashmir, they have been sidelined by New Delhi itself, and they are doing it on the basis of whims and wishes of hardline Hindutva forces. That is making it precarious with every passing day.
A prominent human rights defender, Khurram Parvez, was recently detained and sent to Delhi. Why India is tightening its nose on human rights groups in Kashmir, and what will be its impact?
It is not that they are tightening the nose around human rights activists for the first time. We have instances of human rights activists being targeted in past as well. Jaleel Indrabi, Dr. Ashai, and so many human rights activists were targeted in past. Now, this time, they have extended it to Khurram Parvez as well. For Khurram Parvez as well, it is not something new. Once this article 370 was scrapped, at that juncture, he was arrested. And prior to that, he had a problem. Once one of his limbs had to be detached from his body because of facing a mine blast. So what is happening this time is extension of the same policies. They have never been tolerant about human rights over here. I have been teaching human rights. We had a diploma course on human rights at Kashmir University that we had discontinued because government didn't favor its continuation.
Mr. Shaukat, we have seen a rise in targeted killings in Kashmir in which some Hindus, outsiders and Muslims were targeted by suspected militants. And we have also witnessed after scores of encounters, families claimed their members were killed in staged gunfights. Are the horrors of 1990s back in Kashmir?
It is worse than early 90s because at that juncture, the insurgency was manifest. Political leaders were free and they also wielded some influence upon insurgents. At this juncture, nothing is clear and killings are going on without any break, be those killings by the security forces or from the other side. And this has created a sense of fear among all people. And people don't know how to cope up with this situation because no one knows who this unknown gunman is who is targeting the civilians and why civilians again become target of security apparatus as well. This is a mysterious situation which is pushing Kashmir to worse situation than early 90s.
if so many things are happening in Kashmir, Mr. Shaukat, then why are people not protesting?
Once you choke the space of dissent, dissent does not manifest the way it used to manifest itself previously. There is dissent. Recently, Hurriyat gave a call after Hyderabad killings, and there was overwhelming response to that call. And again, once there were some killing of militants in downtown, for 3 days, whole of downtown remained closed. Only yesterday and day before yesterday, we have seen downtown again closed because mother and a daughter were arrested at Rangrete. So it is not that people are not protesting. Since the media is choked, it does not reflect it. That makes them to feel that people are not reacting. They are reacting, very much reacting.
Well, Mr. Shaukat, thank you very much for taking the time and explaining all of this. Thank you all for joining us. We will see you in the next podcast.